Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and this time we focus on one of the most successful programs in the country for assisting people experiencing homelessness, and it's right here in San Diego. It's our neighbor, Father Joe's Villages. The mission there is to prevent and end homelessness one life at a time. Father Joe's Villages is kind of legendary around here. It daily prepares up to 3,000 meals and houses as many as 2,000 people a night, from infants and adolescents to adults and seniors. It offers a whole range of programs and services, from housing programs to emergency services, health care, employment and education services, and a whole bunch more. Our guest to discuss that with us today is Deacon Jim Vargas, who serves as president and chief executive officer there at Father Joe's Villages. He comes to that job from a very successful business career that saw him at companies as an executive, companies like the Copley Press and Citicorp, Citibank. Deacon Jim Vargas, thanks very much for being with us.
Cy, thanks for having us.
So how does this happen? I ask you this, maybe some people will want to prevent it happening to them, that you go from being an executive at Citibank to running an organization that serves the homeless.
It shows you how God works, right?
Amen.
Yeah,
it really is.
I mean, because the reality is that, and I reflect on this quite often, the reality is that everything I had before that, before this, I should say, it was in preparation for this.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the midst of my time at Copley Press, I was ordained a deacon, right? So, and at the end of that stint, instead of going on to another corporate initiative, let's say, I went into pastoral ministry for 4 years, right? And I thought that's where God would have me until the end of my days, in a sense. And then this opportunity at Father Joe's came about, and it's a great blend of my business acumen as well as the pastoral side. Because this very much is a business. I mean, it's a business of helping people.
Yeah.
You know, this is a 450 team member operation, a lot of employees.
Wow.
It's a $35 million operation. I mean, so it very much needs to be run as a business, but keeping in mind that it's for all the benefit of those who are so very, very vulnerable.
And you've got 450, you said, team members there working. But also, I think Father Joe's Villages in San Diego is just that place that people volunteer at. You know, youth groups will go there. So do you have any idea how many volunteers go through the place in a year?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I love spending time with the volunteers because they're so very important to us. We had 10,000 volunteers last year. Cumulatively, 165,000 hours. I've put a price tag on that. $4 million.
Wow.
And so which means, Cy, that if I had not had the benefit of those volunteers, those great volunteers, I wouldn't have had the money to really have provided the services that they've provided. So they're extremely important to us.
And now it's called Father Joe's Villages, for those who are not familiar with it, because of Father Joe, who is himself kind of just a larger-than-life San Diego character, a priest of the Diocese of San Diego. He was put in charge of this St. Vincent de Paul undertaking years ago, and he turned it into the Villages. And then they named it after him, and I'm guessing probably they named it after him because you can raise a lot of money with his name. I don't know.
Well, that was part of it, and also because he is so iconic, and people have come to think of that village as his village.
Yeah. So he used to not really talk about homeless people, or his word was neighbors in need.
That's always right.
So what is that? What is that about him? First of all, as a Catholic priest in the community, he was a wonderful reflection of the Catholic faith. But how does that neighbors in need idea fit in with that?
It's extremely important. I mean, we are brothers and sisters. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we are.
What kind of Catholic are you?
One to another, and including those who are on the streets. Those who are so very, very vulnerable. You know, we as church, if we're for nothing else, we're for the poor. I mean, we see that time and time again in Scripture, in the Gospels. Right? Did we see to whom was Jesus reaching out? Right, the outcast, whether it was the leper or the woman caught in adultery, or so many different situations. He visited a tax collector's house. He scandalized constantly.
Right.
And this is the Lord and Savior who we follow. Right.
Yeah.
And so we similarly should, in a sense, be scandalizing out there. All right. And it just like he was, in a good way. Right. So so we need to take care of those who are vulnerable. So these are neighbors. These are our neighbors. And where should we see our neighbors? Should it be okay for us as a community to have our neighbors on the streets suffering? or should we provide the services that they need, including housing, so that then they truly are neighbors, just like our neighbors next door, right? They would be have their own dwelling, and they would have the services that they need in order to retain that, that dwelling. So that's the whole concept between neighbors in need.
I feel like maybe we Catholics, though, are we're not distinct enough in that way. I mean, Father Joe certainly was, and lots of the folks at the villages are. But I wonder if you experience this as well. There's some negativity towards the poor, even within the Catholic Church, that people will blame. These people are just—they just want to drink all day, or they do their drugs, or they this and that, and that we that kind of gives us permission not to be distinctive in the way, to be scandalizing in the way you're talking about.
Well, it's interesting. I look at it the direct opposite. All right.
Oh, okay.
Because I look at it, we should not be judging. Right. And again, who do we take the example? Our example is Christ.
Yeah.
All these individuals with whom he interacted, he didn't judge them. When they came to him, what did he do? He extended the hand, and for the most part what he was extending was love, right?
Right.
And charity, right? And so he wasn't judging them, and then he was in so doing, he was drawing them to whom? Not only to himself, but to God our Father, I mean, because that was his whole purpose, and that is our purpose. So we're not there to judge. I mean, should we be looking at these individuals who are on the streets and saying, oh, they brought it on this, themselves. Why? Because of substance abuse, let's say, or because they're lazy or whatever it is. You know, if we truly are Christians, then and we look towards Jesus and how he acted with individuals, we shouldn't be judging. We should just be extending that love and that charity.
And so that's the idea that you're not just a cot for people to crash on.
That's right.
And that strikes me that comes from that very Catholic idea, shared by people of goodwill all over. I don't want to, like, we haven't patented, but the idea that a human being is a creature with great dignity. And so it's not just, go lie down over there. But you have, what is it that you try to do with this idea that it's like a continuum of care? You're going to take care of the immediate need, but it's not going to stop there.
That's right. That's right. That's not the end game in a sense.
Okay.
And that's why what we do, it's a good term you're using, continuum of care. That's what we use as well. So when an individual comes into us, we don't take a cookie cutter approach. Every individual's situation is different, right? Their life experiences have been different. So when they come in, we assess their situation. A lot of these, we have a health clinic. We're blessed to have our health clinic, and we have a relationship with UCSD Medical School.
Yeah.
There's a dual residency that they have, and their one and only clinical site is at Father Joe's Villages. So their residents come in, and this is where they train. So, and we've benefited that, our clients have benefited, because a lot of our those who come to us have mental health issues, right? Mm-hmm. So that's been helpful there. Or we have our addiction and treatment center. So on the health side, you can't do anything if you don't have your health, right?
Yeah.
And so part of the assessment is, are there health needs here? Right. And so we help them in that regard. You know, if you've been chronically homeless, odds are that you have a higher incidence of high blood pressure and diabetes. And so we deal with that. Right. And we try to bring those things under control. Then, of course, in order to be able to gain an apartment and retain it, what do you need? You need income.
Yeah.
Well, that income, some of it comes through disability checks, because some of these individuals are disabled. A lot of it comes, frankly, from employment. People think that those who are out there and are homeless don't have employment. A good number of them do. They're just underemployed because it's so very expensive to live in a community like San Diego. Right?
Yeah.
So we help them gain the skills. We have sector-based training, as an example. We've gone out there into the market, and we've surveyed what employers need. And we've come back and developed curriculums. So we have a culinary arts program. And we've put out actually great chefs that work in restaurants and casinos and the like. We have a property management program. And we've trained property managers on the hospitality side, the housekeeping. They're security guards. We have a security guard force, right? So we've decided, so let's develop a program along those lines because it's needed out there, right? Not only for our benefit, but in order to train our clients to become security guards, our certificates are being recognized by employers. And so they're going out there and they're gaining employment. This is very, very key in helping them to get on their feet, right?
That's wonderfully creative, too.
Of course. Yeah. And it's all for the purposes of being able, for the end game. Because the end game is not for them to stay with us. It's great, as you say, that we take people off the streets in the immediacy. It helps sanitary condition, because sanitary conditions and the like. But they can't stay in temporary measures forever, right? The end game is having an apartment.
Yeah.
And so we prepare them for that, including the building out of affordable and permanent supportive housing, which we have in our mix as well. So we're blessed to have the full spectrum of of what an individual needs. And that's because it was determined years and years ago that if we provide certain services and we expect these individuals to go elsewhere for additional services,
they won't.
They're not going to make it for various reasons.
Yeah.
We're really the only services provider in Southern California that has the full spectrum of these services, and we're blessed to be able to do that.
You know, it's interesting as you say that, and you talk about all those volunteer hours. You mentioned the medical school at UCSD, a secular institution. It gives you that feeling of this Catholic institution that this priest, you know, Father Joe, has built up as being just yeast. Just leaven in the world, and then everybody else gets to come and be part of the bread. You don't have to be Catholic to do it.
No,
but it's a very inclusive model. Like, if you're a person of goodwill and you've got something to offer, come in and share it here.
That's correct. I mean, we have people of all faiths who are employed with us, who are team members, and we serve people of all faiths and no faiths. Right? I mean, we serve them not because they're Catholic. We serve them because we're Catholic, and that's what we're called to do, right?
Yeah,
again,
right.
Why? Because from whom do we take our example? And it all continues to come back to Christ. Not that we're out there proselytizing. In fact, Cy, we have Catholic Mass on our campus. We have a chapel, but we also have ministers from all other denominations who come in.
Wonderful.
And they have their services also with us for those who are there.
But you don't let Baptists in.
We let everyone in, Si.
Sorry. Okay. So, all right. So here you are, this leaven in the world, and it kind of, I mean, it started in the 50s, but then in the 70s and 80s, Father Joe built it into this extraordinary thing, and it has become a model. He was featured on 60 Minutes because it became a model for how you do this.
Right.
And a very successful model. But what about so I'm going to give you the critique, which is, okay, you're dealing with symptoms but not causes, because we have a society. I mean, California, I mean, just to be frank, is a very unjust society. It's not arranged to be affordable for families.
Right.
It's not arranged to be affordable for the working person. Like you talk about the person who has a job but can't afford housing. We have a tremendous housing shortage here.
We do.
And without blaming anybody, I mean, we're all part of California, but it's not so how do you, how do we move on that front so that, the housing market isn't crushing people so that they end up with you?
Right, right. And by the way, it's not just as it relates to those who are on the streets.
Yeah.
There are those who have never been on the streets and are just hanging on by their fingernails.
Right.
Right. And some of those cross our doors, actually, because it gets more and more expensive. And so they fall into homelessness, something they thought they would have never have imagined would have happened.
Right.
And yet it does happen. Here in San Diego, we have the lowest rental vacancy rate in the nation. We're tied with Los Angeles. It's about 3.2%. That means, Cy, that no sooner does an apartment come on the market, it gets snatched up. Now, is it going to get snatched up by one of our clients? Well, it's hard for that to happen, especially when you couple that with the fact that the average one-bedroom apartment is $1,800.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So the combination of that is toxic for our population. So that's why the introduction of affordable housing, it's so very, very critical. Here, we talk about California as a whole, and what I've said, I think, pertains across the board to the West Coast. Here in San Diego, we've lost, in the last 6 years, we've lost 10,000 SROs, single room occupancies.
Yeah. Is it because they get developed into something more expensive?
They get developed into market rate.
Yeah,
and that's because
when
they were put in place 55 years ago, they had 55 years as a lifespan, and then they didn't have to stay affordable housing. So people who own those now, and it's gotten very expensive here, they converted to market rate. That loss has been a tremendous hit to individuals here who were utilizing that. That coupled with the fact that we're not building out affordable housing fast enough. So that's why you probably heard that a year ago I announced on the part of Father Joe's Villages that we would be building out 2,000 affordable housing units throughout the next 4 to 5 year period of time.
Yeah.
And that's extremely aggressive.
It sounds aggressive. Like, who builds 2,000 units?
No one has yet.
Yeah.
And no one ever has. And but we're going to do it, and we've been working very diligently at that. That is through the acquisition of existing motels and refurbishing them and turning them into units, and also building out new construction. You know, these tents, you probably heard about these bridge shelter tents that have been put up in the city of San Diego.
Right.
One of them is on our property. And on that site, this time next year, the tent will be taken down, and we, God willing, we're praying that we will break ground there on a 14-story building, 407 units.
Wow.
Wow. That is going to be the change maker in this town.
Yeah. Right?
And
yeah.
But that's important for us to do. Now, takes a lot of money, takes a lot of conviction. We've been working through all the entitlement processes to kind of get you know, all our ducks lined up in order. Things are, you know, God is making it all come together. The finance side, you know, is another aspect. About 75% to 80% of that building will be publicly funded, but it means that we have to go through various sources in order to obtain that funding. It's very tedious and involved, and but you know, we go from one to the other, and then there's the philanthropic portion of that. So, you know, we have to raise some money as well. So, but that will make a tremendous difference.
Yeah, it will. When you think about 10,000 units, that's at least 10,000 people got no place to live because those units just disappeared. They went up into the. But is this kind of construction of affordable housing? Will that ultimately provide relief at that end of the market where you just won't – it's that thing where the person is hanging on by their fingernails. You know, they're a good person. They're doing – they're working. They're trying, and probably a family situation.
Right.
And all that. So, but the California market just keeps making it that much harder for them. That person falls into homelessness. Can we get it to a place where that's not happening, where people can make it?
Yeah, I think we can.
Okay.
I think, but now, is it easy and will it happen overnight? Absolutely not. But I think what we need is, as a community now, we need to do a better job of strategically approaching this. I mean, what we lack here as a community is a strategic plan. I mean, again, as you mentioned, mine is a business background, right? So, you know, an endeavor of this nature needs a vision and a strategic plan. So we have to kind of assess where we are as a community and then a strategy for getting to the end game. The end game being not that people won't fall into homelessness. I mean, we'll always have the poor, right? I mean, Jesus himself tells us that. But that we have an infrastructure in place as a community so that we can keep that from happening through diversion, as an example, as much as possible. And when it does happen, that there are resources in place to deal with that in short order so that people don't become chronically homeless. I believe that can happen, but it takes a lot of moral conviction, Cy. Okay, and it takes... the realization that resources have to be put against this, and if we do that as a community, then yes, we can truly put our arms around this. In the absence of that, we'll be those hamsters, you know, that hamster in that wheel
keep going around
in a circle, right?
So
you know, I keep from my end, I keep pushing in that direction, and trying to convince others that that's the way to go.
And what you said is moral conviction, meaning that you've got to kind of build up a moral case that the community goes, yeah, we got to do this.
And that's right. And it's not just a moral case, because it's an economic case. I mean, also, economically, this is impactful to our community, right?
Yeah.
The homelessness is. I mean, if you think about conventions that want to come into town, then if they see that we have an extremely bad problem as far as those who are on the streets, that's going to keep them from coming into town. There are economic implications to this as well. We have the fourth largest homeless population in the United States.
Is it? Do you have any sense that might be because of the weather in part? I mean, is this easier to?
It you know, that obviously is impactful as well, but that's not the primary reason. A lot of people do ask me that, and the reality is that the statistics have shown that that's not a primary reason for
really?
People. Yeah, I mean, people have 80% of the individuals, 75 to 80% of the individuals who are homeless here in San Diego fell into homelessness while here. So it's not as if they fell into homelessness elsewhere.
And then said, hey, I got to go where it's warm.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's not the case. And so, though, I mean, that's part and parcel of it, but there's mental health reasons. There are a lot of people. We have the second largest veterans homeless population in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, we're a military town, right?
So, yeah, we are.
So that's very impactful. But these numbers are not, you know, not getting any better. I mean, they're pretty much in year to year, last year versus this year, pretty much have stayed stable, and that's not a good thing. We need to start driving them down.
What about the NIMBY thing? Do you ever get that from people? They're just like, oh, it's wonderful work. Just don't do it near me.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Is that pretty much your life story?
You hear it a lot, and I understand. That's where we, you know, our tagline, neighbors. They're neighbors, right?
Yeah.
If you start viewing them as neighbors
and
not just the opposition in a sense. I'll give you an example. There's a group down in the East Village, where Father Joe's Villages is, and a lot of homeless services are down in that area, as you can imagine, because that's where the homeless are. And so there's a group down there of business leaders who initially, when we started talking about that 14-story building and putting it up, they were opposed. And then over time, because we work with them, we constantly keep the lines of communication open. And over time, they've come to realize that, you know what, this is really going to positively be impactful to this community. And they now are endorsing our plan.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so it happens. Right. You know, you just have to work with it. People feel threatened sometimes without even knowing. They feel, well, you know, either there's violence here potentially, or theft, or even a lowering of my property value, whatever it is, right? And so we work with that.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems to me that when a volunteer comes to Father Joe's Villages and a neighbor in need comes to Father Joe's Villages, they both get something out of that experience that it seems to me more and more we all need, which is to be less alone and less alienated, you know, from others. That to have human contact is getting to be such a rarity,
right?
You know,
right?
And it seems like you provide that.
Well, yeah. I mean, in fact, you bring up an interesting point. This whole social media thing and texting, as an example, I worry about our young people because, right. I mean, their interaction is all on this machine, and they text, and there's nothing wrong with texting. Don't get me wrong, but sometimes I wonder, you know, social skills and the development of those, and really, really staying connected in a more personal way. In any case, I'll tell you, I have volunteers constantly who tell me, I'm getting so much more out of this than I know I'm giving.
Yeah.
You know? And yet on the other side of it, those who are being served are so appreciative about the contact. I mean, you can walk down the street as an example, and what most individuals who fall into homelessness will tell you is that they have become invisible. Individuals don't want to make even eye contact, right?
Right.
So when you take the opportunity to make eye contact and to greet them in the morning and to ask their name, mm-hmm. as an example, right? Then again, you start to humanize them because they are our neighbors and our brothers and sisters.
Right.
Because a lot of times they feel dehumanized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It strikes me that our Pope Francis, he talks about going out to the margins, and you're a deacon,
mm-hmm.
and you can, I mean, I suppose as a deacon, you can stay in a parish kind of, you know, doing your Sunday preaching and sacraments and that kind of thing. And just as we all can,
right.
You know, laity can, priests can. But now you find yourself in this situation where you spend your working day in a place that most people would say that's the margins. Do you have a greater kind of appreciation for what the Pope is saying to us, to go be a church going out to the margins?
Oh, absolutely. And we're all, you know, even if you're in a parish, let's say, and not necessarily out physically providing food for those who are poor and on the streets, you know, even as clergy in our own parishes, we find a lot of brokenness. There's brokenness all over, right? So, so even
no shortage of that,
right? And me included. And so, you always are in a position. The Lord always puts you in a position where you're able to be impactful in that way, through charity, through mercy. I mean, you mentioned that we don't have monopoly on mercy, right? I mean, if you think of even the other monotheistic religions of Islam and our Jewish brethren, mercy is at the heart of what they're about, just like mercy is at the heart of what we're about. And so, and I think that's a recognition of the brokenness that in all of our lives. And so, yes, I'm working most definitely at the margins there. But it depends on how you find the margins. I mean, the margins are kind of all over. This is just a different type of margin.
Oh, what an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, it's a weird kind of phenomenon of the modern world that people feel that they are not at the center of it, that they're pushed to even if you're home alone, there's we have this epidemic of loneliness at home. That's or right. We have, like, as you said, the social media kind of epidemic, or now which I'm sure you see a great deal of this, like this opiate epidemic, or you can just see that people just need to be comforted. And sometimes the opiates will do that, not in a healthy way, but it'll do that. Mm-hmm. Do you see Father Joe's Villages as a place that brings people together in that way? I mean, that seems to me the fundamental Christian thing is bringing people together. That's what Jesus, he goes around gathering people up,
right?
You know?
That's right.
Is that, do you see that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, fulfillment is what I think people are looking for, fulfillment in life. And a lot of them, in the absence of something of substance, where do they find their fulfillment? They may find it in opiates.
Yeah.
Right. They may find it in so many other pornography.
Yeah. Oh, that's
which is plaguing our society as well. Right.
Yeah.
There's so many things. And at the end of the day, the ironic thing is that at the end of the day, they're not fulfilled.
No.
Because that doesn't fulfill you.
No.
We know that.
Yeah.
Right? We know it doesn't fulfill you. And so, but it becomes addictions for them. These young people and into their 20s. I heard just this morning on the news that youngsters, I'll call them, and young adults are becoming addicted to games. These video games.
But yeah.
I mean, truly where they're spending almost 20 hours of the day on this stuff, you know, and it's a true addiction. And again, that's not fulfilling them, right? I mean, and so it's diverting that. So in our situation, when you come together, when you bring volunteers together, as an example, or even our own team members, and then you bring individuals who are suffering for very, very, very real reasons, that gives you fulfillment, huh? So that you feel, because at the end of the day, if we're making a connection with another human being and we're making a difference, a positive difference in their lives, that truly brings fulfillment.
Deacon Jim Vargas is the chief executive officer. Is that the right?
That's right.
CEO right. Mm-hmm. of Father Joe's Villages. You can find your website.
Is neighbor.org. Very easy to remember, neighbor.org. And our 800 number is 1-800-HOMELESS.
And you find out all about the great work they do, and you probably wouldn't turn down a donation or two to help build this housing project or any of these other projects.
That's the only way we do it. I mean, one of the frustrating things of nonprofits is that you may have had a great subsequent year, let's say December 31st, and you say, oh, yeah, we've made all this money for our services. On January 1st, the bank account is zero, and you have to build up the coffers again. So it's a constant struggle for us. I mean, so we donations are extremely important. We can only do what we do through the generosity of those who are out there and our benefactors. So, you know, household goods, automobiles that we auction, boats that we auction, specialty items, you know, sometimes jewelry and so forth. Whatever it is, we have retail stores where people can come and buy, and as a result, we turn those dollars into services. I never turn away cash, Si.
Really,
cash is good.
Okay,
is good. So
good to know.
It's all very, very important. And honestly, we could not do it without the generosity of the community.
All right, neighbor.org is where you can find out all about Father Joe's Villages and their ongoing kind of continuing revolutionizing of the way we care for neighbors in needs. Deacon Jim Vargas, thanks again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of our listeners here at Catholic Answers Focus. If you enjoy Catholic Answers Focus, tell your friends about it, and they can sign up for Radio Club, where they'll get weekly announcements about Catholic Answers Focus just by going to CatholicAnswersLive.com, CatholicAnswersLive.com, and sign up. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Focus.